Technology.ie number 58.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 58 from March 15th, 2013, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon. Hello and welcome to technology.ie. This is Con O'Muinichon in the Edgecast Media Studio. And out on the internet, it's Michaela Nealon. Where do we find you this evening, Michaela?
I'm down in East Cork, Con.
That's all right. Good place to be. Nice day there today?
Well, it's dark. I don't know. It's the middle of the night, for God's sake.
When did we last do this? We missed last week, I think. We did the week before, didn't we?
We did. We had technical difficulties the week before, so we ended up just doing the interview with Christian Dawson.
That's right, yeah. So, unfortunately, pity about that. But that was, unfortunately, I think the podcast that we lost, the interview you and I did, was one of our best, Michaela. I dare say it was our best ever. It will live in legend. But unfortunately, nobody will ever get to hear it. But there you go.
This is probably a good thing in some respects.
Probably a good thing. Probably no harm at all. Let's get talking about the last couple of weeks, Michaela. For some reason, it's spring cleaning. It's redesigning. People are redesigning websites. Everybody's bringing out a new look for spring. It's like the fashion catwalks on Irish websites and world websites as well. Google and Facebook getting a new look. But first, the Irish Times has got a new look. What do you think of it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, in terms of the aesthetics and everything else, I've heard a lot of conflicting reports. Some people are quite happy with it. Others don't really like it that much. But what was interesting for me was looking at how fat it was in terms of how long it took to download the damn thing. So I did a bit of digging into that there the other day and discovered that a big website. I mean, it would not fit on a floppy disk. To load the main page of it was how much was it again? It was something insane. Like when I tested it, it was 7.7 megs. The front page.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of stuff, I suppose, that it's loading that's that you don't necessarily see. For example, there are these new menus that kind of pop down and take over your page when you have a look at it. I'm not sure if there's anything heavy in that in terms of images or data or anything like that. My first impression of it, I've actually spent the last couple of weeks, Michaela, working in a sort of, if you like, mobile mode. So instead of docking my laptop and using a large screen, I've been working mostly on a small laptop screen. And I have to say, both the Irish Times website and the Irish Independent website, the way they're laid out, I was finding them quite frustrated. The Irish Independent's been revamped lately as well, I think, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think a couple of weeks back they did something. I mean, the reality is for me, like, I don't go to the main pages of most of those newspapers anyway. I mean, somebody would send me a link to a specific article and I'd go to that.
Yeah.
But when you actually go to the main page of some of these sites, it's weird. I saw a few people posting screenshots from both sites, you know, from mobile. And, you know, the way it displayed was a little bit strange, to say the least. But, I mean, I had a bit of an exchange with somebody who worked for the Irish Times and, you know, they were supposedly tweaking and making changes, so it might get better over time. We'll see.
Just to finish what I was saying there in relation to that is that when I actually docked my laptop again and had my full, I don't even know how many pixels real estate on my screen at the moment, but had the full large screen experience again, I got to say it's only in that context that it makes sense and that I thought it actually looked pretty good. But it's interesting anyway to see there's an investment being made into those sites, and no doubt, as you say, things are going to be tweaked in the weeks ahead. And then Google Plus has a new look, but I don't really see anything much in that, Michaela. They've posted that they've just added some new tabs, I think, isn't that it?
Well, I haven't really noticed any real difference. I mean, you know, there's a few kind of minor tweaks that they've made. And yeah, I mean, if I'm looking at it now, yeah, there's a couple of changes, but nothing, there's nothing kind of dramatic. Mm. I mean, it's not like, you know, you log in and you get completely confused or anything.
Have you got the new Facebook look yet? Has that activated for you, or have you?
No.
No. No. Have no. You've requested it, I presume, yeah?
No, I've been too busy doing other things.
Yeah.
So no, I haven't bothered. I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, when it comes, you know, yeah. I'll deal with it then.
No, I mean, I signed up for it, but that's going on. That's well over a week ago now at this stage, and I haven't seen anything, any change or anything like that. But from looking at the Facebook blog post to go with this, I don't know if you've seen it. They pretty much seem to be redesigning Facebook to look like Google Plus, or is that just my impression?
I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to change how they integrate the advertising.
Okay.
I suspect. But again, you know, some of this stuff, it's like, you know, you could spend your entire life, Con, just watching what Facebook and Google do. But the reality is, I mean, while I might be quite a heavy user of a lot of these services, it doesn't mean I'm going to sit there worrying about their latest design iteration.
Mm. Well, if it improves their mobile thing, I think that's their mobile user experience. That really is something that they have to get right. It's not something. It's something that I avoid if at all possible. Visiting Facebook on a phone, my Android phone, because it's just a cluttered and difficult and unrewarding kind of an experience. Some say that's just the experience you get from Facebook anyway, and I posted a link there, Michele, to an article on Mashable. I don't know if you saw that. The headline, very simple: Facebook is so uncool, and it points to a comic strip which shows a mother coming and talking to her son and saying, "Have you got time to talk?" "Sure, Mom." And she says, "I've noticed you're hardly on Facebook anymore. Is anything wrong?" And he says, "Well, Facebook's so uncool. It's so over. It's nothing but people bragging about their stupid lives. Plus, there's the privacy issues too. I'd rather spend my time doing something real." "Wow," says the mother, "that's really grown up of you. I'm so proud of you." And then she goes on line later onto Quora and asks a question. Topic: teenagers. Question: what should I do? Details: my son and his friends are quitting Facebook and I don't know how to track his activity anymore. Help! I mean, we've been hearing about Facebook being over for, 6 years now?
But come on, Colin. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, it's cyclical. I mean, you're always going to hear, you know, it's the end of this, it's the end of that, it's over, it's whatever. I mean, you know, people worry about these things. But I don't think it is. Not yet, anyway.
It is the end of Google Reader.
Yes.
Wow.
That took a lot of us by surprise.
Do you use it, Michele?
Not that much.
There it is, right there.
I used it for a good while. Then I was using another one of those RSS readers, which I can't remember the name of, which was acquired by somebody else, and then they did something weird to it. And again, part of the thing, Con, is, I mean, you know, if you're using Flipboard and you're using Facebook and you're using Twitter and you subscribe to a lot of the blogs and things like that through Twitter, Facebook, and, you know, you can also follow them on Flipboard. So I'm probably actually reading the same stuff anyway.
Do you remember a time, Michele, or was it just me, when you'd subscribe to a whole load of feeds and, you know, it was a bit like email. It was a bit like, you know, got to keep up to date with my feeds. I've fallen behind. I've missed, you know, I remember, you know, back in the day, maybe subscribing to something like 60 to 80 feeds of personal blogs, business blogs, all kinds of blogs and news sites and websites. And at the very least, glancing at it on a daily basis, maybe just, you know, selecting a whole lot of stuff and marking it red. But, somewhere along the line, we stopped doing that, or at least I did. Did you ever do that?
Yeah, I mean, I used to have a thing. Like, I'd get up in the morning and, you know, while I was having my first coffee, I'd, you know, log into whichever reader it was, and I'd, you know, I'd scan down through the latest ones. And there were certain ones that I had to read in this reader, and it was just, you know, part of my kind of morning ritual or whatever. But now what I tend to do is, the certain sites that I go to, you know, several times throughout the day just to see if they've got any new articles or any updates on specific topics. And then everything else just comes to me via, you know, Twitter and Facebook and, you know, people email me links to things. And, you know, there's so many other things, you know, coming at you
a lot
of the time.
I think what we used to do was you used to go especially to blogs, I think, for commentary on things and for, you know, to see while, you know, this is the news from the States, but I wonder what Irish people are thinking about this, or I wonder what such and such a blogger is thinking about this. But we're in touch with all of these bloggers still, Michele, but we see them on Twitter mostly. At least that's how I do it now.
Well, I mean, I would still be reading their blogs and I'd still read their content. It's just that somebody's going to tweet a link or share a link to the post.
That's how I do it. But
let's say, for example, the thing there in the Senate the other week about, you know, it's passports to access the internet and all that other rubbish that they were talking about. You know, there were several people who posted about it on various different blogs. So, you know, people were sharing links and discussing that. And, you know, I did see people's posts on the subject.
But I would still read, let's say, I would still read the better Irish bloggers, but I don't subscribe to any of them anymore. Well, sorry, I tell a lie. I do subscribe. And occasionally I will go on a RSS collection binge and start collecting feeds and actually putting them into Google Reader and saying, yes, I must get back there and read them sometime, but I never do. But I still find I'm reading those blogs, the better Irish bloggers and the better Irish blog posts. But it's done by virtue of the fact that when they, you know, I'll be skimming Twitter feeds, I'll be skimming. I don't know, what am I? I think I'm following the most of 1,000 people now on Twitter. And what happens is that when somebody posts something good on a blog, it gets traction, it gets purchase from Twitter users. And if it's the article of the day, you'll find more than one. You'll find several of the people you follow on Twitter are actually posting links to, you know, you've got to see what Michele Nealon was writing about today or something like that.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. I mean, and the other thing as well is if you look at a lot of the blogs, I mean, some do it very, very well. Others, you know, they do it in a slightly different way. I mean, say, for example, Mashable, which we link to quite a bit. If you look at the top of the articles now, it'll have something like, you know, so many thousand shares. And they're taking all the shares with Twitter, all the sharing onto Twitter, all the sharing onto LinkedIn, Google+, Facebook, and they're going to go, right, this is the total number of times that article has been shared. Therefore, the article is considered to be, you know, the most popular article of the day or the hour or whatever.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I don't think RSS is dead. I don't think the blogging is dead. I don't think any of these things are dead. I think it's just, at the moment, you know, we're probably consuming things in slightly different ways. But this thing, going back to what we started talking about, you know, the Google Reader thing, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I tweeted from the Black Knight account last night, just, you know, quick poll, you know, what do people use Google Reader? And apart from one person, you know, there was a bunch of replies within a couple of minutes, and they're all going, yeah, we do, and we use it every single day. So, you know, a lot of people are using it. And there's actually a petition started over on change.org, you know, asking Google not to shut it down. And when I looked earlier today, it had, you know, quite a large number of signatures.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's something, as I say, that, you know, I can see both sides of this in a way. I suppose I remember kind of nostalgically some of the early days when I did begin to follow blogs and use aggregators and feed readers and things like that. I just put into the notes there, Michele, it kind of brought back to me, do you remember the names of some of the various iterations and the various things we went through? Blog Lines was what everyone was using at one point. Do you remember that?
Well, that's the thing I was using.
Was it, yeah. Yeah, I used it briefly and didn't like it much. I moved on to something called Feed Demon, which was... it was an offline reader. It was actually a standalone client, but it worked with something called NewsGator as well. And it was developed by a guy called Nick Bradbury, who back in the late 90s developed a web authoring ID.
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course. I remember him.
Yeah, I can't remember even what the web authoring tool was, but it was something I actually, it was one of the first pieces of software, shareware, that I actually ended up, you know, buying and paying for.
Back. What was it? I'm going to have to Google that now. Yeah. That was actually, yeah, I had the same bit of software. I used to use it all the time.
Yeah.
It was absolutely Homesite top.
That's right.
I used to use TopStyle. Absolutely fantastic bit of software.
It was. No, I mean, a lot of what was in it then, a lot of the, you know, you can find in Dreamweaver now.
And the thing is, when Dreamweaver, yeah, Macromedia bought Homesite.
Oh, did it eventually turn into Dreamweaver then in that case? Is it or what? No?
I don't really know. Yeah. I mean, here we go, off onto a bloody segue. Homesite was a HTML editor owned by Adobe.
Yeah.
Formerly owned by Allaire and Macromedia. Unlike WYSIWYG, HTML editors such as Microsoft Front Page, it was designed for direct editing or hand coding of HTML, blah, blah, blah. And it was available for Windows. It's Homesite development ended in May 2009.
Really? It was still in use that late?
Yeah. So just looking here. What happened to that now? It's still available.
Get out of here.
TopStyle is still available for Windows.
Right.
And it's now maintained by a guy called Stefan Van As, or As, I'm not sure how you pronounce that.
Right.
And it was last updated in December.
Very interesting. I must go and check that out. For the little bit of web development that I do, I'm very happy with Dreamweaver, I have to say. Dreamweaver, yeah, that's what it's called, isn't it? Tess? Yeah. Gosh, interesting stuff. But anyway, the same guy, Nick Bradbury, who invented Homesite, in fact, came up with something called Feed Demon, which I used for a while. And one of the reasons I used it and liked it was because it handled we don't call them attachments, we call them extensions, isn't it, in RSS. In other words, podcasts. It handled those particularly well. And that was something that I liked about Google Reader as well, because there was a Google Listen app which integrated with Google Reader. And if you put your things into your Listen folder, podcast feeds, that is, in Google Reader, you could actually have them coming up on your Listen app on your phone or whatever it was. But again, it's the thing about it is, Michaela, is that actually I think Google discontinued Listen last year. Now I'm still using it. I'm not sure, you know, it's just a case that they've discontinued development on it or whatever. But it's funny. Instead of subscribing to a whole load of blogs, I'm now filtering, if you like, my text content through Twitter and reading what people vote for, if you like, on Twitter. But the one thing I do still subscribe to and invest in RSS for is for podcasts. And there are a handful of three or four maybe programs, some of them radio programs. In fact, most of them radio programs, some of them purely podcasts, that I download and listen to religiously every week, you know, and that is definitely something that I'm going to continue to want to be a subscriber for, you know, than anything else. But speaking of things being discontinued and blasts from the past and things like that, Digg say they're building a Google Reader replacement. I thought Digg was gone actually, but it seems it's not.
I can't keep up with all of these at the moment. I mean, a Digg reader underway, Digg to the rescue, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, death and rebirth, can you dig it? I'm just looking at actually some of the titles that are coming up here in Google News when you do a search for Digg. On heels of Google Reader demise, Digg announces RSS Reader. Digg, yes, that Digg is building a Google Reader replacement. I mean, I was watching some of the stuff last night on between Twitter, Facebook, and on a few of the other sites, and you know, there was this absolute explosion of activity when news got out that Google Reader was being shut down. And I mean, a bunch of different companies saying, you know, oh, hey, you know, you can use our app, or this is why you should use ours, and this is why you shouldn't use this, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's interesting to watch. I mean, and, you know, some people kind of saying, things that, you know, make a lot of sense. But I mean, years too late.
And at least two sites, Forbes and ZDNet, both coming out with articles with almost the same headline: five great RSS reader alternatives to Google Reader. And some of them are in common between the two top five lists as well. What about alternatives, Michele? Are you going to go and look for a new aggregator now? What are you going to do?
Well, I've got a Bloglines account, which I just logged into whilst I was talking to you, so I'm grand. I don't mind. Bloglines is still working fine.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They might. It was Bloglines, as far as I can remember. Now, I could be completely wrong about this. I think it was acquired or changed hands or something a year or so back. Mm. And there was an upgrade and a change as a result of the change of ownership. And you had to migrate your stuff from the old system to the new one, which I obviously did because I logged in there now and it's working fine. Okay. So, you know, no problem.
I might go and check that out again. I got to say, I'm not entirely sure in terms of whether this is a wise move for Google to discontinue Reader. I mean, It does seem a bit premature in some respects. I mean, it was a very good generic aggregator, and I would have thought something like that should be developed rather than discontinued. But
well, see, the thing is this, Con. I mean, like the Google Reader cull was just one of many that they announced yesterday. I mean, they're cutting off a bunch of other products. Now, a lot of the products, if you read the blog post they put up, they've morphed into something else, or there's an arguably better replacement. And other ones are things that, you know, people just weren't using. Mm. And, you know, companies like Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, I don't know, there's a bunch of others out there. You know, they do sometimes just shutter particular projects. And yeah, at least in the case of, you know, a lot of these ones, you know, they're giving you enough time to find an alternative, to move to something else. You know, it's not like you're going to woke up this morning and discover that all your feeds have disappeared. Mm. So, you know, it's not the end of the world. Mm. But at the same time, you know, why are they shutting down? I suppose that's a more interesting question. Is it that it doesn't fit with their priorities, whatever they are? You know.
Well, I have to say that, you know, while I do feel, you know, that kind of shocked and surprised at it, I couldn't honestly tell you. It must be at least a month since I logged into Google Reader. So there you go. I can't really complain. I'm not in a position to object to it, I suppose. Let's move on, Michele. Black Knight are sponsoring. You're being altruistic and philanthropic, sponsoring the 10th annual Cork Lifelong Learning Festival. What's that about?
Well, the Lifelong Learning Festival, I mean, it's all about, well, lifelong learning. It's the idea of education throughout your life, that you don't just stop learning when you finish school or when you finish college. So it's organized by Cork VEC, and they've been running it now for 10 years, obviously. And they have all these different activities throughout the week, all about further education, training. And our friend Damien Mully is giving a couple of sessions on using Twitter in one of the libraries in Cork City.
Very good. Very good. And, of course, the social media awards are coming up as well, speaking of Damien Mully.
Yeah, the nominations opened, I think it was on Sunday night. So, as usual, there's a bunch of different categories there. I think, looking at the list, it looks like they've kind of rejigged the categories a small bit, but not dramatically. Mm. And, you know, it's free to enter. You can enter companies that you respect or whatever, or you can enter your own company. It doesn't cost anything. And, you know, it's usually a good fun night. Now, they changed the location, though, for the actual awards themselves.
It's been in the Mansion House, hasn't it? Or I know a lot of Damien's events have been held there, and he's been very happy with it in the last few years. But this is moving to
the Clyde Court Hotel.
Clyde Court Hotel, okay.
So, I mean, the new categories they've got this year are inbound marketing / content marketing campaign, best social media only campaign, and best mobile app.
Okay.
Events. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, you know, the as I say, it's a fun event, and, you know, in many respects, for a lot of companies these days, I think social media is probably where they're going to be spending more time and energy than other media.
I it's been a while, I think, since I've been to any of those events, but I must say I'd be very interested in perhaps attending that now again. Are you going yourself, or is it too early to say?
Yeah, probably. I think I already booked a hotel room in Dublin for the night of the event so that I can actually have a couple of drinks. I think I'll probably go. It's not definite. I might not. I mean, who knows? Mm. But I've said for the moment.
Very good. So it's on May 30th, 2013, in the Clyde Court Hotel in Dublin. Let's move on, Michaela. There's a story here which has two elements to it, and one of those is something that you know you often talk about as well, which is the value of a good domain name or a particular kind of domain name. Here's a domain name, cdn.net, that sold for $185,000.
Yeah, no, this is one of those things. It's just because. Okay, somebody who watches what happens with the domain sales, and I get a lot of emails every single day from various people telling me about domains that have been sold, telling me about domains that are for sale, and talking about the value of them. And one of the things, Con, is, you know, you hear of this, you know, this big sale going on. So, for example, at the moment in Australia, there's a load of city domains up for sale. And we're not talking about small, little villages out in the sticks or anything. We're talking about the likes of sydney.com.au and melbourne.com.au. Those are up for grabs. And, you know, it's always interesting to see, you know, what happens to these domains when somebody acquires them. You know, do they go on to be developed into something really cool and interesting, or do they just move from one domain investor to another and, you know, nothing much happens with them? So this one here, cdn.net, was sold for six figures, went for $185,000, as you said, back in March of last year.
Right.
And the guys in OnApp, you know, they're a software company that produces, it's a software solution for companies such as ourselves that offer cloud hosting. And the company's run by this guy called Ditlev Bradal. He was one of the guys behind UK2 over in the UK. And then he moved on and was running VPS.net and then, you know, spun off into this OnApp, the OnApp software solution. So CDN.net, I mean, CDN, you might be familiar with the acronym, you know, Content Delivery Network.
Yes.
So the CDN.net, it's all about... you know, allowing people to set up their own CDNs and the software, and there's various other things there. Because a bunch of the OnApp partners, including ourselves, we're able to join like the CDN Federation, kind of a federation marketplace. So you've got guys in, say, I don't know, some various parts of the States, different parts of Asia, different parts of Europe, in Africa, whatever, who might have an OnApp install. So they're able to do is give over some hardware nodes to the CDN network, and they're able to basically swap traffic.
So it's about kind of mirroring content, isn't it? Strategically, or geographically, but you know, let's say if you have a certain amount of content that you're serving across the world, you can put it closer to the people who are downloading it. Isn't that the idea?
That's basically the idea. I mean, at the simplest level, you'd see on if you look at some sites, say for example, images. You might find that the images are on JavaScript, the CSS, maybe the fonts, a few of these things, they're being served from another domain name or from another from a different subdomain. Now, it could be that they're all coming from the same servers, but they're just literally running them off a different machine. Or you could have it that they're split out so that when a visitor goes to that website from somewhere in the US, and they're getting the images from a server in the States, although the rest of the content is coming from the server in Dublin, say.
Okay.
And it helps with when you're trying to get a site to load that little bit faster. And it's, you know, there's different types of CDNs. I mean, At the simplest level, it's just for serving, you know, the static content, you know, the images, those things that aren't going to change. I mean, it's not like you're going to change your CSS file every 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah, but what these guys now in ONAP with CDN.net, they're launching something new with this now, Michele. What's different about this? They're describing it as the first user customizable and usage-based content delivery network. What's new here?
Well, I think, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I mean, some of it's marketing fluff. I mean, no offense to Ditlev if he listens to this. I mean, I was actually chatting to him yesterday via Twitter about it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the idea being that, you know, what they're doing is they're making it so that you can build out your own CDN using their software and then join the federation. So you don't need to be running ONAP and all the other things. You can actually, you know, start deploying your own using the software. But obviously what they want you to do is to put a server or servers into the global network. And see, by doing that, what the idea is that you're reducing the costs for everybody else. Mm. It's a bit like, you know, the way you have the neutral exchanges, let's say like INEX in Dublin or Lynx in London, where, you know, the ISPs, hosting providers and all that, they meet, you know, in inverted commas, and swap traffic. Mm. So I think that's basically the idea behind it. I mean, most of the CDNs you see are commercial solutions. You'd go to Akamai or you'd go to, that's a bunch of them, there's so many of them out there. You'd go to any one of these CDN providers and you'd say, hey, I want a CDN. And you might sign up online, or for some of the more advanced ones, it might be a bit more complicated than that. And you buy a certain amount of capacity, you buy a certain amount of transfer, depending on the solution that's out there. Some of them have very, very advanced options. This is a kind of, you know, I think it's simpler in what it can do. It's not, it won't have some of the more advanced, funky options that some of the more expensive ones have, but it's going to be slightly more accessible. I don't know how well it'll do, but it's an interesting idea anyway. But it's nice to see, say, a premium domain being actually used in real life, as it were.
I tuned out there about a minute or 2 minutes ago there, Michele. I'm sure what you were saying was very interesting, but
Thanks, Tom.
No, it's not. It's actually... No, I'm only messing with you. No, actually, what I just in the last 10 seconds or so, I got distracted by our next story. It's we have another Black Knight story coming up, but I'm going to skip over that for a minute because didn't I see the word porn? And of course, I had to go down and have a look and read what it was about. Porn stars without makeup. And I've just been browsing these pictures in the last few minutes there. Michele, why is this a tech news story? Tell me again.
Well, look, we're guys. I mean, so do we really have to justify it?
No, we don't need an excuse.
Well, you know. Now, seriously, though, I thought it was interesting for a couple of reasons. You know, it's become one of those kind of memes, as it were, because this story broke a few days back. I think somebody picked up on this makeup artist's Instagram feed. Mm-hmm. And somebody else took photos from that feed and compiled them and, you know, realized, oh my God, you know, this is a collection of adult movie stars, women, and these are photos of them before they had before makeup and after the makeup. And, you know, what's interesting for me was looking at I got the link from somewhere else. I think actually one of the Domainer blogs was talking about it, and the feeds on Imgur, however the hell you pronounce it, and it had like, you know, nearly 2 million views in the space of a couple of days.
6 days, it's got 1.8 million views in 6 days. That's got to be a lot. I'm not really familiar with the kind of traffic that Imgur gets, but that has to be a lot. That is a lot, without a doubt.
It is a lot. I mean, I've no idea what the normal figures are for something like that. But when you see something like that, you're going, Christ, you know, 2 million. And then if you do a bit of Googling around it, you know, do a search for porn stars without makeup, and you find that pretty much every single blog or news site that covers anything to do with, you know, with fashion, with style, with technology, with lifestyle, with, I don't know, news has run a story on this. It's it's taken on a life of its own. I mean, there's different coverage and different angles from different ones. I mean, looking at, say, Huffington Post, I think it was, had under weird news. And that article had 13,612, it'd been shared 3,000 times on Facebook, tweeted 559 times, 1,932 comments on that blog post. We're like, wow. And there's loads of other sites that have got articles about it as well with, you know, similar levels of activity. It's like people are fascinated by those.
Well, what's kind of interesting about it is that there is a whole lot of porn out there, Michele. There is a whole lot of porn, and there's a whole lot of porn stars, and there are a whole load of other places to see these faces that are in these pictures, and indeed more than just their faces as well. But the fact is that what's interesting here is it perhaps this unusual angle on it, this porn stars without makeup, or indeed anyone without makeup? I know this is something that some magazines actually, I think, have been doing similar kind of features recently of getting people. Actually, it was there's a TV series now. I'm not watching TV at all these days, Michele, but there's a TV series, I think, that was either on recently or it's on currently, which is reuniting old pop bands from the 90s, including Bewitched. Do you remember the four girls from Ireland?
Yeah.
But one of the things they did was I think some newspaper or magazine did a feature with them, where they photographed all four of them, who are now, I guess, 15 years older than they were in their heyday. But they photographed the four of them without makeup as well. I think it's a trend or a thing at the moment.
Well, there's that, but the other side of it as well, though, Con, is, I mean, it's like, you know, say with the porn stars, if you go back and have a look at it,
mm-hmm.
You know, looking at, I mean, some of these women are absolutely gorgeous with or without makeup.
That's true.
I was just looking there. Was it Cassandra Nix? I think she won the top page. No, I don't know if that's her real name or not.
If that is, in fact, your real name.
If that is your real name. I mean, she's a very attractive lady.
I have to say, just looking at these, you could argue that perhaps some of them are you know, that makeup certainly does its job and you can see them. But I must say these faces, in my view, are definitely, the vast majority of them are more attractive, and attractive maybe not in a conventional sense of beauty, but more human, more personality, more attractive, definitely, and more interesting, I think, without makeup. But
oh, there's a mixture. It's just, we're not going to harp on about it. talking about porn. Since we're talking about porn, let's talk about porn. Did you see the other link I posted there, Tom?
Okay, now what's this about? The global internet porn habits. What?
This
show is going to the dogs, Michele.
I know, it's terrible. What can we do?
Well
the,
done.
The, I picked up this link through, I think it was BuzzFeed or one of those sites, and what they've done, it's interesting. It's basically a porn search engine called PornMD, which I've never heard of. I'm God honest truth, I actually didn't know about it. And what they've done is they've aggregated and published statistics about what people are searching for and in which countries.
So what people in different countries are searching for, ever wonder which states or countries are into what when it comes to what goes on behind closed doors? In this graphic below, we take a closer look at the sexual interests of people around the planet. I find it hard to imagine that there's that much difference, but I could be wrong there. Okay, what does it say about Ireland? Let's get down
it
to
it. It doesn't. That's the
what?
Thing.
What?
It doesn't. It's like you click on the Europe tab and you bring your, and it's an interactive graphic, which is actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, of course, like, we don't have.
You bring your mouse over the various countries in Europe. Okay. So you get information about Portugal, Spain, France, the UK, Germany, Czech Republic.
Oh,
Austria.
And you just mouse over and up it comes. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's nothing for Ireland. So,
the thing
I was thinking to myself, and I'd love to find out from them what the hell's going on there. Well, does that mean that nobody in Ireland searches for porn?
Well,
highly likely. Or does it mean that nobody uses their site, or that they just didn't aggregate it? I don't know. It's weird.
Well, Irish people just aren't into that, Michaela. We just, you know,
Right, that's it.
No,
sorry.
We don't do any of that stuff. No, it's all them Europeans and British and people like that. You know, we in Ireland, no, it's all good. You know, solid, healthy, open air football and you know, stuff like that. You know, we don't ever. No sex in Ireland.
Oh, that must be it. That must be it. It was one of those things to say. It piqued my interest because. Oh, did I use the word peak?
You did.
That was a Freudian slip. I just thought it was kind of curious and different. I mean, most of the infographics you get, like some of them, it's pretty damn obvious that you know the people putting them together are just doing it so they can get some link love. And, you know, some of them are just kind of rehashing the same bloody themes over and over and over again. So I thought this one was a little bit different.
It's viral marketing. I mean, you'd never heard of this search porn MD search engine before, Michele. And now you have. And now all our listeners have as well. So it's working.
It's working.
Let's move on, Michele. We're going to talk about some Black Knight stuff. I want to talk about your special offers and things like that. But first, what's this about going on the offensive against fake pharma? I know it's something you've mentioned before, you know, people basically marketing dubious, questionable, bogus or whatever, unregulated pharmaceuticals on the internet. And it's something that you've mentioned before. You're concerned about it.
Well, I am. And, you know, the thing is, you know, I harp on a lot about, you know, about policy, and I talk about internet governance, and I talk about how the industry, as in the internet industry in the broadest sense, needs to be responsible. Because if we're not, we're going to be regulated. And it's not going to be nice. It's going to be very, very ugly. And one of the things that came up in conversations that I've been having for the last couple of years with a variety of different people was in relation to fake pharma. And at the time, I didn't really understand the problem. I was like, you know, I don't get this. What exactly is this? Sorry, one second. And, you know, the thing, it's...
Tell them you can't talk now. We're doing a podcast.
I know, it's terrible. They're always distracting me. The thing was that, for me, it's you know, the laws in different countries allow for certain medicines to be sold over the counter with or without prescriptions, depending on where you are. So I thought it was that pretty simple. It's like, hey, you know, the Americans are complaining because everybody's going to Canada, but it's a different thing entirely, because what we're talking about here is drugs that should only be allowed under prescription, because, you know, if you take them, you end up dead if you're not careful. You know what I mean? So let's say the certain things that there's a reason they're prescription only. So the thing is that if you actually look into it a bit further, you discover that prescription drugs are not allowed to be sold online in many countries. Like in Europe, but the only country that really allows prescription drugs to be sold online and with a prescription and from a licensed pharmacy is the UK. Yet, if you go onto your favorite search engine and you do a search for, say, cheap Viagra or cheap Cialis or any one of those other ones, you will find literally hundreds, if not thousands, of sites selling you stuff without any prescription and a rock bottom prices, and it's all illegal. It's all illegal.
So, why do you think, or how is this? How do you get involved in this, Michele? What is it for your business? What is it for Black Knight? Are they, you know, are sites like this trying to host on your servers, or what?
Well, I don't know whether I don't know if any of them are actually hosting with us. But there, you know, there'll be some of them who would register the domain. They register domain names with companies such as ourselves. I mean, there would be a certain number who would have registered domains with us, and there's others that are using other registrars. So we're now working. We've entered into a partnership with LegitScript, And what they're going to be doing is reporting to us domain names that are being used by unlicensed pharmacies.
Okay.
And we will shut those domains down.
I see. And you're also updating your terms of service to prohibit this kind of usage of your services.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, the thing is this, is that I'm a very strong believer in an open and free internet. But open and free does not mean you can go off and break the law online. Mm. You're not allowed to do it offline. Why would I facilitate you doing it online? You know, the thing around the fake pharmaceutical stuff is that it's something that it just makes sense from our perspective. So we're working with LegitScript, and I'm also on the steering committee of ASOP EU, which is the European Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacy.
Okay.
So it's all about, see, the thing is this, Colin, it's like, let's say, for example, you or your wife or one of your kids needed to get medicine. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want it to be a situation that you go online and you get something and it ends up killing you or making you very, very sick. And that's the reality.
And, you know, as with a lot of things that we discuss and we talk about in this, and in fairness, Michaela, you lead the way in terms of Irish internet businesses very often in a case like this. How does Ireland compare in terms of how we deal with this? How do Irish companies such as yourselves compare? What is the international standards in relation to this? ASOP, as you say, it's a European alliance. You know, how does Ireland fit in with this?
Well, ASOP is the Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacy in Europe. I mean, there's also an American one. The Americans have been working on this kind of thing for the last few years. And, you know, some of the biggest companies in the industry are involved. So, you know, you've got the GoDaddies, you've got the Newstars, Enom, other ones like that. They're working with LegitScript and others. Mm. In Europe, it's only really beginning to start now. We're only starting to really kind of get together within industry. So you've got the pharmaceutical companies, you've got the payment providers, you've got the search engines, and you've got the hosting providers and the domain registrars. So it's a matter really now of just trying to get things together, to try and organize ourselves, come up with kind of sane mechanisms to deal with it. I mean, it's fine for us as a single company to enter into an agreement with LegitScript and to make, say, right, you know, this is what we will do. But I can't turn around to my colleagues in industry and say, hey, you have to do what we're doing. Hmm. That's not how things work. I mean, I'd love to be able to do it, but I can't. I mean, that's the reality is that you have to work with industry and go, right, these are the kind of things that we can agree on. These are the things that make sense. If you want to do more than that, then that's obviously your choice. But let's work on the things that we can actually control. I mean, there's a lot of kind of confusion around this, in that, you know, people are saying, well, oh, you know, sure, you know, that company is in, you know, country X. In country X, that's legal. But the thing is, if they're selling into Ireland, for example, then no, it's not legal. It's not. It may be legal. Probably it might not be for them to sell in Spain, for example. And you know, nobody's expecting anybody to become an expert in all the ins and outs of the bits of legislation. But it is categorically illegal for them to sell into Ireland. What's happening with other companies in Ireland? To be perfectly honest, I've no idea. We're the only ICANN accredited registrar in Ireland, so we're the only one that is likely to attract people who've had issues with registrars in the US and elsewhere. Mm. So what you see happening is, like, you know, these guys are registering domain names. They're discovering that, you know, GoDaddy or Enom or some of the others are going, not with us. You can't have those domains with us. Mm. And they're moving. So they're moving around the place. They're just trying to find a safe haven away from those nasty people who might actually want to follow the law.
Let's talk about some other stuff you're doing, Michaela. We've got still got lots more to talk about on the show, but we're going to talk about some new stats that you've published. But first, what, you're encouraging people to invade the United States?
Well, we thought, why not? Like, so we did the invading Europe thing going back there about 2 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
So this time round, now we partnered with the .us registry, and we thought it was kind of timely coming up to St. Patrick's weekend. You know, there's a big kind of Irish American thing, and as you know, Con, for a lot of the Irish tech companies, and well, actually Irish companies in general, the US market is like the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's so big, there's so much that you can do out there in the US market. But the thing is this, you go registering domain names and setting up websites. How can you tell whether that website is targeting the US market or targeting the French market or targeting the, you know, the German market? The most obvious way to do that is using a domain name. So let's say, for example, Sony. You go to sony.ie, you're going to get the Sony website for the Irish market with the products and the services they're offering in Ireland. You're going to get the contact details for the Irish dealers, the Irish service center, all that kind of thing. But if you go to sony.us, you're going to find all the stuff specific to the US market. And there's no reason why an Irish company can't register a .us domain name for the US market. Now, there are rules and restrictions around .us, so it's not suitable for private individuals. You'd need to be a business or a company to do it. So we're marketing that now as one of our latest things, pushing .us domains.
Excellent. What's this about your stats then that you've published some new graphics on what exactly? It's a blog post on your website titled "We Like Stats Part 2." What's that about?
We love making a stat and making a splash. James is playing around with graphics, so he's got like horses and other things. No, what happened there is that we got the IDR sent out some statistics to the registrars this morning, yeah. With the statistics for the top 20 registrars in terms of new registrations and deletions and growth and everything else for the first 2 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking at them, and it's like it was quite interesting. And, you know, we're doing very, very well. In the top six registrars, we're doing very, very well. And what's interesting as well was looking at the number of deletions versus the number of registrations, the number, you know, so basically how many domains are being held on to? How many of them are actually being renewed and continuing? And what's the kind of growth? So looking at the figures, it became pretty evident to us, we're doing very well overall. Some of the other registrars aren't doing as well. They're deleting way more domains than they're actually registering. So their numbers are actually going down.
Your market share is increasing.
Yes.
Congratulations. And you're celebrating.
Of course. Why not? So we've got a coupon code, expires at midnight tomorrow night, Friday. I may make sure that I say that loud and clear.
Okay.
Friday night, midnight. Friday the 15th of March 2013 at midnight. You can get it up until then. You can get a register a .ie domain name for 1 year for $9.99. Or you can transfer an existing .ie domain name to us for $9.99 using the coupon code DOMINATION.
Resistance is futile. Very good. Michele, we're having a good old chat. We've got loads of other things to talk about.
I haven't finished.
You haven't finished? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, no, I had to get this in here. Jesus Christ, man. No, I had to get that in there. If you buy a hosting plan for 1 year, an annual hosting plan, a minimus, medius, or maximus for 12 months, you can get a .ie domain name for the first year for $5.99.
Ah, you're giving them away, for God's sake.
And I'm not a generous person, Con.
You're not.
You're
not. Well, you know, fair enough. I think you have a soft side, Michele.
I do. Oh, don't be saying that.
That's slander, I know. Let's move on. You've got a post here on technology.ie, which of course is where this podcast lives, and it's in relation to Google offering guidance to website owners whose sites have been hacked. That's worthwhile. That's
incredibly useful.
Yeah.
The thing is, the reality is, you know, you put up a website on the internet, it can and it might, and in many cases it will, get compromised at some stage.
Most people have no idea what to do then.
No, they get completely confused. Some of them don't know that they've been compromised at all. I mean, others realize there's an issue but don't really know what the issue is, and it takes them a while to work it out. So what Google have done is they put together a kind of a help center for victims of hacks. Mm-hmm. And they go through, starting with the basics, you know, what the hell has happened, you know, what's happened here. And then, you know, guide people through a number of, you know, fairly straightforward steps of how to deal with it, who to talk to, where to get help, what steps they need to take to, you know, recover their search engine rankings and everything else. It's very, very helpful. And, you know, hopefully people will use it, because it's the kind of common thing that we see is it's not some big, nasty, complicated advanced hack. It's something much, much simpler. It's something like where, you know, they haven't updated their WordPress or their Joomla or their, you know, whatever bit of software, and there's a hole in it. It's been compromised.
That's got to be the most common vulnerability, or the most common, I would say, cause of vulnerabilities, really, isn't it? Not keeping your contact management system up to date.
Oh, totally, totally.
Let's move on, Michele. Netflix have announced a league table, is it, or an ISP speed index? We saw something like this recently, I think, from them. Basically, they're rating ISPs in terms of speed. Obviously, that's of interest to Netflix and making sure people can stream their stuff as effectively and as seamlessly as possible.
Yeah, well, what they had been doing is they've been publishing on and off the last few months some kind of basic rankings on a monthly basis. But what they've now done is they've actually launched an official speed index. When you go into the main page of it, you can get like a kind of a global ranking, and then you can dive into, you know, specific countries where Netflix have a presence, and you can see which ISPs perform best, whether their performance has got better or got worse compared to previous months. You know, it's an interesting thing, but I mean, obviously, of course, it's in their interest. But they obviously want, you know, their users to have a good experience.
Well, I know that some users in this house, who are the younger users in this house, are having a great experience. The kids' content on Netflix, they're not getting tired of it at all. And we've had some wet and miserable days recently, and there's been some streaming marathons going on here in this house, I can tell you. But so not surprising. The Hunger Games, I note as well, that has been added to Netflix catalogue recently as well, which is kind of unusual to see a movie that was out so recently showing up there. I got to say, the content for grown-ups is not quite the selection for grown-ups is not quite as good as it is for kids. So it's still a difficult thing for them, but what I'd be interested in seeing actually is what whatever about the ISP figures, what the customer figures are like for Netflix, what kind of growth they're getting in subscriptions and that. And we talked about it a few weeks ago, whether or not something like the commissioning of their original series House of Cards, whether or not that kind of thing has helped in any way. I'm noticing a lot more Netflix ads as well, especially on YouTube.
Well, there's some of that is going to be what's called retargeting, Tom.
What's that?
Well, retargeting is where it's the adverts follow you around the internet, because you'd have gone to the Netflix website, and the Netflix advertising system goes, oh, right, he's obviously some way interested in our products and services, so we're going to display adverts to him elsewhere. So you'll find it's not that they're actually doing more advertising. It's just that because you went to their website, you're seeing more of it. It's called retargeting. It's a lot of companies do it. But talking in Netflix,
but just very briefly, Michele, that's a total waste of advertising. I'm already a subscriber.
Yeah, but most of that advertising is pay-per-click. So unless you click on the ad, it's not costing them anything.
Okay.
I mean, why would they care?
Okay.
No, the other thing is like Netflix have actually been sending us a lot of press releases, which is great. I mean, I love getting press releases that are coherent, as opposed to some of the incoherent babble I get from other companies. Mm. There's a load of stuff going on with them for content, so they're adding a load of Irish shows to their catalog. They've got three seasons of Father Ted. Kilmascully seasons 1 to 5, Matty seasons 1 and 2. I don't actually know what that is. Sorry,
it's Pat Short as a play. It's a kind of a comedy. I think it's Pat Short playing a guard, the detective, I think.
Okay. Tommy Tiernan. There's a couple of his shows.
Yeah.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which isn't Irish, but they included it anyway. Once, the movie. Sensation, I assume that's another movie. Ordinary Decent Criminal, which you probably know. Mm-hmm. There's a whole load of...
The Clinic, I think, is there as well, isn't it?
The which, sorry?
The Clinic. Do you remember that medical drama?
I never watched it, sorry.
Me neither, and I'm not inclined to click on it on Netflix either, but there you go. Anyway, here's a job for you, Michaela, if you ever decide to stop being a captain of industry. You could be the Chief Information Officer for the Irish government.
No thanks. No, thank you.
Really?
No, I to be honest with you, Colin, I would be very, very, very slow to take a job like that.
It sounds. I don't want to be cynical, but I know what you're getting at. It sounds like a thankless task in some ways.
To be honest with you, I'd be very, very slow to take any job in government.
Isn't it? Well, you know, don't look at it from your point of view or from the point of view as to whether or not it's I imagine for some people and for a certain type of person, maybe with skills in this area, and it's not so much IT skills, but IT management skills, it could be attractive. But from the government's point of view, isn't it a good idea to hire someone like this to try and take someone on and see if they can... provide some leadership and strategy. It's an exceptional opportunity, it says, for an experienced ICT professional to influence a major change program, to provide guidance and leadership at the executive level across the entire IT spectrum, and to take responsibility for the development of the ICT strategy for government and the wider public service. Isn't that a wonderful vision, Michele?
It is, and it's sorely needed. I don't know if you were listening to, I think it was 5-7 Live this evening, and they were talking about, I think it was the IT infrastructure in the hospitals, and how, you know, it's completely disjointed. Mm. Like they've got bits of it, but they don't have all of it. So that, you know, they're able to, they've managed to automate, say, 95% of a particular type of process. But the other 5% is causing massive delays and headaches, because it ends up going back to being hard copy and paper and everything else. I mean, obviously they could improve in efficiencies, and you know, maybe if that person was empowered to actually do things, then it would be good. I don't know. I mean, it could end up being a thankless job.
You've just hit the nail on the head, and I think it's a job that should probably come with a cape and boots and wearing your underpants outside your tights, really, because you are going to have, if you think about, you know, if you're going to be effective in a role like this, you are going to have support. You are going to have authority and resources. And, you know, if they just hire someone and say, here, you're our CIO, and that shows we're doing something about IT integration and strategy at a government level here in Ireland, but really it's just lip service, well then, you know, that is going to be the thankless job and perhaps a very frustrating job as well. Oh, cloud computing is mentioned, Michele. Cloud computing.
Come on, Conor.
And wait, e-government. It's in the same sentence. The successful candidate will lead the CIO Council and will drive the implementation of the e-government and cloud computing strategies. Oh, it's stirring stuff, Michaela. You know, it could be.
They mentioned synergy as well in there somewhere, Conor.
Synergy. Let's try some buzzword search here. No, not there. Listen, Michaela, let's tear into the final stretch here and tear through the last few things that we've highlighted to talk about. Good luck to the new CIO. If you're interested in the job, it's published and posted on publicjobs.ie, and the closing date is the 21st of March. Now, whatever about porn stars without makeup, new Game of Thrones beer makes debut, offers complex flavour. Michaela, how is this a tech story?
Because all the geeks love Game of Thrones. Do I have to explain this? Our listeners know what we're talking about.
Okay. So, and some of them like beer as well, I guess. So anyway, you can buy Game of Thrones beer, it seems.
Okay, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Geeks. beer. Yeah, yeah. They fit together. Do I need to explain the connection? Honestly.
Not at all. Okay, that's fine. We'll tick off that and move on. Czechs pull the plug, as in CZECHS, people from the Czech Republic. Czechs pull plug on 4G spectrum auction after carriers bid too much. You're making this stuff up, Michaela.
I'm not. When I read that story, I read the headline. I was like, "God, what? What the hell?" No, it actually makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. You remember when we had all the auctions for 3G?
Mm, yes.
Going back, however many years ago it was. And you know, a lot of those auctions went absolutely nuts. I mean, we're talking about, you know, stupid amounts of money being thrown around to get these licenses.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the problem with that? The problem is, you know, you're making this massive investment to get a license, and then you have to recoup that investment somehow. What the Czechs argue is, well, hold on a second. We don't want to have that kind of thing. We want to have competition. We want to have reasonable, decent pricing and everything else. But these guys, you know, they were bidding far too much. They said, hold on a second, stop the lights, enough.
So if you spend too much for the license, you won't have the money to invest in actually building the network and providing the services. And the only way you can do it is by gouging the customers.
Yeah, basically.
So, which is why, you know, the alternative approach really, and it's an approach that has been used in this country, is to do what they call a beauty contest, where it's not all about the money you're offering to pay for the license. It's also about what commitments you make in terms of rollout and pricing and things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, this you know, there's probably different ways you could do it. I mean, they've obviously committed to some kind of bidding process. They're going to rerun the auction later this year, seemingly. I don't know whether they have the option to change how they do it. I mean, but the concern they had was that the money involved was just nuts, and it was going to cause all sorts of problems. So they stopped it.
Deutsche Telekom, Telefonica and Vodafone had collectively bid $1 billion US dollars worth before the regulator pulled the plug, saying investments of that level would mean unreasonably high prices for consumers. While you were talking there, I was just Googling, and our auction in Ireland for 4G is expected to pull in, or did pull in, about 450 million, which is about half of what was bid in that Czech auction. So it is, looking at some of the other ones in that same article, the UK 4G spectrum auction last month pulled in $3.6 billion, and the Dutch auction in December accrued $5 billion. So it's a question of what the economy can bear and what you're talking about in terms of the overall size of the market and that as well. Okay, a couple of more things, Michaela, here. SimCity was, they've launched a new SimCity, and I've heard good things about it, but you're saying not so good.
Well, it's one of these interesting kind of things. You know, obviously these days, so many bits of software are no longer solely on your desktop or your mobile device or your whatever. Mm. They rely very heavily on some kind of cloud remote service. And seemingly, they made a total and utter mess of things with SimCity. They launched it and then discovered that they just did not have the capacity at all. So the problem was that you'd be, have you ever played SimCity, Gone?
No, I've meant to.
You know what it is, though, I hope.
I do. Is it the one where you build up a civilization from scratch, or you?
You're building cities, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So you build different buildings, you build roads, you're building an entire city, and if you tax your population, and if your economy grows, then you earn more taxes, so you can build shinier objects. You know, it's it's an entire kind of, you know, God, you are God and you are controlling this entire environment.
Yeah, I went out and bought, I mean, we're talking 15 years ago maybe, or 10 years ago, I remember going out and I think I bought it at some point, and then I discovered that my graphics card wouldn't support it, and back in those days it wasn't an option to upgrade the graphics card. So I think that was as close as I ever got to SimCity. But no, it's something I think, yeah, I'd certainly be interested in having a go at some stage. Some people, I imagine, it can get quite addictive.
Oh, totally. I mean, you can spend hours and hours and hours, or, you know, even days, you know, building up this entire thing. And the problem was, because the new version relies so heavily on the cloud, the remote part of it, that if your desktop wasn't able to connect, it would basically wipe all your work. So, you know, you'd build up your city, and, you know, you'd make certain amount of progress. The connection through to the SimCity servers would fail, and boom, you were left with nothing.
It sounds like a kind of a mistake, really, Michele, or a rather elementary one for a company like Electronic Arts to make, because this really is something they should have foreseen, making sure the capacity was in place before they launched it.
Well, this is the bit where they're getting a lot of criticism. They claim that they had done a lot of testing, that they'd had extensive user testing and betas and blah, 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 blah. And then we're trying to kind of go, oh, well, you know, when we put it live, people used it in a way we hadn't predicted.
Hmm.
And it's like, what? Sorry? So let's see. You build this super duper game, and then you're upset and traumatized when people actually play it. What? Come again? So I mean, there's a load of articles have been written about it. Loads and loads and loads of people up in arms, because, you know, the EA is one of those companies that a lot of gamers have like a love-hate relationship with. You know, they've got a fantastic catalog of games, and some of them are absolutely fantastic. But, you know, there's this kind of thing. I don't know, gamers, you know, it's a particular mentality. But this thing was like a massive screw-up, absolute massive screw-up.
Okay, well, we'll link to at least one of those articles on quartz.com. SimCity mess shows how little faith business should put in beta tests. And that's about it, Michele. Just one more thing. People are used to hearing you and reading you and hearing you on this podcast, of course, in other places as well. They can see you in a video now.
If they want to assault their eyes, yes, they can.
All right, we'll link to that as well. You were in the States recently, and you were interviewed for Cloudflare, and people can. What was that about? You were discussing regulation and industry and government and things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was talking about. It was an interesting chat with them, and what they were doing was they were interviewing a load of people who were at the event, and they arranged interviews with people in advance and said, hey, you know, can you come round to our booth and, you know, give us 10 minutes or whatever. And so we had a chat about internet policy, governance, you know, the industry self-regulation versus being regulated, and of course a bit about what we as a company do. So I don't know. I mean, have a look at the video. I mean, bits of it probably is a bit cringe worthy, and you can see my diet isn't going as well as it should be, as I'm still a fat bastard. But anyway, there's a few video interviews with me out there. That's still the most recent one.
Very good. All right. Well, we look forward to that, Michele, and thanks for talking to us tonight. And all that remains for me to say is to wish you a very happy St. Patrick's weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Colin.